Last several shiurim we've been discussing the takanas chachamim of Eir Chatzeras. The halacha is that even though min haTorah, once you have an area that's surrounded with walls, so there's no question, it's Rishus HaYochid, you can carry there. It doesn't matter how many people are in there. Nevertheless, with the Rabban, if you have a type of a setup where you have private houses opening up into public areas, either in the old way when you had chatzeros, you had literally bottom opening up the chatzeros, or today you have apartments opening up in the lobbies, hallways, things of that nature. You have two yards that are sharing, two apartments, whatever it is. Anytime you have a private to a public type of a domain, even though everything is surrounded by walls, and in the Torah everything is permissible, in the Rabbanon we have a problem. And the only way to solve that problem is you have to make an Erev Chatzeros. So we spoke last couple of shiurim about how to technically go about making that Erev Chatzeros. Some of them now we've been assuming that everybody involved is Jewish. Because someone's Jewish, so they can participate in Erev Chatzeros. What do you do if you have one of the people, more than one of the people involved in this communal area is a non-Jew? So how does that halacha play out in terms of a goy? Does a goy create a problem? And if a goy does create a problem, what's the solution to the problem? So this, of course, is very relevant for us. Because in all of our cities, all of our Erevins that we have goyim, we have to reckon with as well. So what is that halacha? So the sugya begins in the beginning of the sixth paragraph, which says Erevin, discussing what the role of a goy is vis-a-vis these halachas. So the Gemara raises a question, with the dearest akum shma dirana. That when the goy lives there, is that considered up? He did to be a deer, is that considered as if he's really formally living there, and therefore it should present the problem? Or do we say, no, deer is akam lav shma deer, that a goy is living there somehow, the chum warrant to concern with in terms of these halachas? So the Gemara finally comes to the conclusion, what seems to be a very, very strange conclusion, that does a goy pose a problem for Erevin or not? Depends. If you already have a problem, namely you already have two Jews who are there, so you have a need for an Erev Chatzeros, then you have to deal with the goy, you have to figure out an Eitzah, how to get the goy out of the picture in terms of permitting the area to carry. But if there aren't two Jews there to begin with, of all there is one Jew and one goy, or there's one Jew and 100 goy, whatever it is, so since the Erev Chatzeros requirement never got off the ground in the first place, so then the goy doesn't create a problem. The goy wouldn't pose a problem, wouldn't require of us to make an Erev Chatzeros. So the bottom line is that if you have one Jew, let's say you have one Jew living in an apartment building, and there are 100 goy, there's no other Jew around, so then there's no need for an Erev Chatzeros, no need for anything. Then the Jew can carry there in his house, in his apartment, in the hallway, everything is mutter. But once you have a second Jew who moves in, then you start to have a problem. So I remember Rabbi Chalab told us that for many years he lived in the Bronx, so it was a thriving Jewish community. So I think one time he was trying to describe to us about how the Jewish community, the demographics have changed, so he made Ha'ari, said that he no longer needs an Erev Chatzeros in his building. That was his description of how things have reached the point. He's the only Jew, the only person who's, that's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's the reality. Anyway, getting back to the story, so the Gemara raises the question, beginning of the sixth paragraph of Erev, how do you make any sense of this? If you hold that Diras Acham is a Dira, so then if you have one Jew and one Goy, that should be a problem. If you hold that Diras Acham is not a Dira, so it doesn't count. It's as if for some reason he doesn't live here up in Din. So then even if you have a need for an Erev Chatzeros, why do you have to cheshbon out with the Goy? The Goy is as if it's non-existent. The Gemara says, so the answer to this dilemma is as follows. That technically speaking, Diras Acham is not really a problem. We really shouldn't have to deal with the goy who's living here. Really, there should be no need to require Erev Chatzeros to be mounted in the area when there are goyim around. Elohat, the Gemara says that Midir Rabbanon, they made a takana to insist on doing something. You have to do something to the goy, you have to do something to get rid of his chelek in the chatzir, his chelek in the mavur. What do you have to do that for? If Hilchos Erevin doesn't dictate that, if Diras Acham is Lashma Dira, so why do we want you to do that? So it's a very strange thing. The Gemara says, we want this to be an incentive that the Jews and the Goyim shouldn't be living so palsy-wowsy next to one another in the same bais, the same chotzah, just next door. It's not a good setup. So therefore, the Chachamim wanted you to do something. What did they want you to do? They wanted you to do what's called Tchiris Rishus. Tchiris Rishus means that you actually have to go rent from the Goy and rent out his chelek, his share in the chotzah, his share in the mavul, his share in the apartment building, in order to permit you to carry there. So the Chachamim wanted you to have to do that. And most people don't want to do that. It's very embarrassing. I'm going to go ask the goy to do schiris rishus, and half the time the goy doesn't want to do it. And one time I had to do schiris rishus with somebody, and the guy said he has to call his lawyer because he wasn't sure, he didn't understand all the technicalities of it. So the goy's going to refuse to do it. It's going to be a problem. I'm not going to be able to carry there. So therefore, although be'ikra din, you shouldn't even need to do anything with the goy, because divas akam is lav shmadira. But mid rabbanim, they forced you to do it.
They wanted you to go ahead and do a schiras v'shus in order to make it inconvenient for you, and it's going to become so inconvenient for you, eventually you're going to decide to move out. That if you're going to say every week the guy's going to be at Tzaras, every week he's not going to want to do schiras v'shus with you, so it's going to be not worth your while. And, move across the street to the Jewish chas, it's a Jewish neighborhood, rather than living together with the guy. So Chachamim, again, it's very strange. They're using Yuchas Eirvin, they're maneuvering Yuchas Eirvin in such a way to reach the desired result that the Jews and the Goyim should be living in the same chotzer. So then the Gemara explains, if that's the case, then we understand why the Takana was only instituted when there are already two Jews there. If there's only one Jew and one Goy there, the Gemara says, that's a milsa de lo shchicha. Says, that's so uncommon. What meshuga the Jew is going to live by himself in a whole Goyish area, a whole Goyish neighborhood, there's all Goyim there, and everyone's, it's dangerous. The Gemara says, you don't have to make a Takana to force the Jew to move out. He's going to move out by himself. He's going to see that he's the only Jew around. What Jew is going to live there in an area of a chotza with all Goyim around? But if he already has a friend, he already has someone who's going to protect him, so he already thinks he's making inroads into the community, he's already starting a new community, he's already bringing young couples in, he's giving incentives, giving them color money, he's bringing in a lot of young couples. So then the Gemara says that we don't want that to happen. If this is a predominantly Goyish Chatzah, there are 100 Goyim living in his Chatzah, and he's going to come in with his friend, so it's not a good idea. It's a bad idea for him to be living there, but if that's already a Milsa L'Shchicha, if it's only one person living there, that's a Milsa L'Shchicha, and therefore there was no need to make this Gezerah. That's what the Gemara says in the beginning of the sixth paragraph of Eirvin. So again, it's a very strange idea that we're no longer talking about Eirvin anymore. We're talking about the demographics, we're talking about the social settings, but the goal behind this whole halacha was that the Jews and the Goyim shouldn't be living mamish in the same chatza for many, many reasons. But Akoponim, whether we understand, you know, whether all of this rationale and all these reasons, whether it all plays out as man as that, but nice, that's the way the Beis and the Gadol set up the din. Those are the formalities. That's how the Mishnayos tell us. That's the din, and that's the din that we observe as man as that as well. So the halacha is, Lamaisa, if you have an area where you have just one Jewish family and one Goyish family, one Jewish family and 10 Goyish families sharing a common courtyard, sharing a common apartment building, then there's no need for the Erev Chatzeres. Once you get a second Jewish family in there, then you have tzaras, then you have problems. And it's not such a terrible problem, you can overcome the problem fairly simple, but then the requirement of Tzchiris Rishos kicks in. So Bizman Hazeh, of course, we have to deal with Tzchiris Rishos, because that's what we have. Aloch Lamaisa, we have Burgerfield, so we make a Burgerfield Tinek Erev. So we have a lot of from people living in the community. On the other hand, we have a lot of Goyim living in the community. So we can't just make a Erev Chatzeres and call it a day. We have to, in effect, be Mesalik, we have to remove the Goyish rights to the public areas, and the mechanism to do that is through Schiris Rishus. You can't do Erev Chatzeres with them. They're not Jewish, they're not eating Chal on Shabbos. The whole thing doesn't make any sense. So therefore, the Chalm Institute, you have to do a real Makoy, you have to do a real monetary transaction, you have to do what's called Schiris Rishus. So that's exactly what we do, Bizman Hazeh, that before we do an Erev Chatzeres, so we go to the Goyim in town, and we say to them, we want to buy out your rights, we want to rent out your rights to this communal area, we're going to rent out your rights to the streets, we're going to rent out your rights to the apartment building, whatever area we're trying to include in that Erev. And hopefully they're going to accept. We'll see as we go on how we do that to make it convenient for them to accept. So we rent out their rights, and once we do a schiris v'shus, then we're home free, then we can go ahead and do an Erev Chatzeres. So the bottom line is that now lemaisa, we now have to do three different procedures in order to permit ourselves to carry in any given area. So first and foremost, make sure the mechitzas are up. We'll make sure that the pesachs and the lechis and the kares, everything, make sure that all the mechitzas are in place. That was the first 6 months of the shiur. And we have to make sure we have a schiris v'shus. That was the last 10 minutes of the shiur. And we have to make sure there's an erev chaseris. That was the last month of the shiur. So as long as all three of these things are in place, then one can carry. Any one of these three are off, so then one is not permitted mid rabbanon to carry in that area. Remember when the era first started in the Heights, I don't know if you were around then, it was around 97 or so, I don't give or take, when the era was first built on the YU side of Washington Heights before it extended over and before it expanded. It was a very, very small area, but it basically went from the apartment building on 187th Street to Reuben Shul. It didn't even cross the Amsterdam Avenue. It was just to enable the women to walk a little bit, push their carriages to be able to go to Shul and Reuben Shul. So when the Erev, after all the tumult and all the fighting and all the politics and everything, the Erev was put up, so it was supposed to be all ready for Parsha Zohar. That was the first big plug for the Erev. That's when the women wanted to go to shul the most. So it was all ready to roll. The strings were up there. Everything was in place. There was one small technicality that the Schiris Rishus had not been completed. We'll see. We'll talk about how we do Schiris Rishus the Maisa. So one of the people who was supposed to be involved, and one of the Goyim was supposed to be involved in the Schiris Rishus, didn't show up for the meeting. We missed him. It was an emergency. I couldn't get them. It was Friday afternoon. The kids, whatever it was, the Schiris Rishus was not completed. So now we're in a real dilemma because it was right before Shabbos, and the Eruv was up. The poles were up. The box of matzahs, everything was in place, and all we were lacking because a little bit of some carelessness that we were missing is chirus rishus. So the ma'aser Shabbos started, and we still didn't have the chirus rishus up in place. So what can you do? So we didn't have chirus rishus because people weren't allowed to carry. So the question was, what was going to be the announcement in the Beis Medrash? I remember at the time, Rabbi Blau was in charge of making official announcements. So we had to craft the announcement very, very carefully because, you know, everyone was expecting the Erev to be up. We had all advertised the Erev was going to be ready for Pasha Zachar. On the other hand, Lamaisi couldn't carry. So to get up and say the Erev is not up, so people were like, what do you mean the Erev is not up? The whole Erev was one block. You didn't have to be a great chacham to see. Connect the dots. You could see the, of course the Erev was up. So they felt that it would be a chuchot lula to make such an announcement. The Erev is not up. On the other hand, we can't say that people could carry because the Maisa P didn't. They're not allowed to carry because the scripture just hadn't been followed up. So they came up with some kind of a nusach that something like the Erev is not functionable or something. I don't know. I forgot what the nusach was exactly. But a lot of people were walking out of shul scratching their head. What does that mean? The Erev is not functionable. I said, well, it's very complicated. I said, you got to learn the whole sugya and the sixth parak of the Erev, but because somebody goofed, and Lamaisa said the Erev can't be used this Shabbos. So by next Shabbos, we made sure to get it functional. Anyway, so getting back to the story. So everything's now going to revolve around Schiris Rishus. So Lamaisa said, what is Schiris Rishus? How do you go about doing it? The Gemara says, very simple. You just go to the Goy. You say to him, I'm here by renting out the rights to your area. And now it becomes all in effect under our jurisdiction. Then we go ahead and we do our Erev Chatzeres. The Gemara says that since we're renting out from the Goy, so we don't even have to do it with a Shava Pruta. We can give even a very, very small amount, even less than a Pruta's worth of a rental fee, because the Goy gets excited even about less than a Shava Pruta. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Goy after the Pachas Shava Pruta amount, so for him, it's important. If you do a Schiris from a Jew, it's got to be more than a Shava Pruta, but if you do a Schiris from a Goy, even less than a Shava Pruta is good. And the Poskim say it doesn't even have to be money, it can even be food, it can be anything, you can be any token thing. You give him a shine, that's considered to be a Schiris Rishus. How often do you have to do this Schiris Rishus? So Rashi has a comment in the second Erevin that you have to do the Schiris Rishus every Friday. Because again, that was the whole reason. The whole reason for the Takana was to make it very, very inconvenient. So imagine every Friday you got to knock at the Goy's door. You know, sometimes when we have to ask a Goy for some Amir Yakum, you know, help or something, it's always very embarrassing. You try to avoid it. Try to explain. Again, assuming that's more to do it. It's not something we like to do all the time. So here Rashi says every Friday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, knock on the guy's door, pull out a nickel out of your pocket and give it to Ms. Chirzushus. The guy's going to come here from a nidnik. So that's going to be an incentive. Eventually, the guy's not going to want to do it anymore. So the Jew's going to move out. So Rashi says you have to do Chirzushus every single week. So that's not our meaning. Our meaning is that we do it once for a long period of time, and that's also good enough. How long is a long period of time? In theory, you could just leave it unstipulated how long the period of time is. I'm doing Schiris Rishus for whatever. So we'll see as we get a little bit more into the details of Schiris Rishus that we try to put some, for technical reasons, we try to put a little bit of a stipulation on, a little bit of a something. So how long should it be? So the bus, it should be very long. It should be very long enough to bother about it, enough to forget to do it again. So there are different minhagim in Europe. There used to be some used to have every 25 years, 50 years, 99 years, like the Panama Canal, you rent it out for 99 years. Or whatever. It should be a significant amount of time. We'll get to one of the Schiris Rishus that we did in Washington Heights, a little bit of a technical one. So I think I did it for 25 years, if I'm not mistaken, one of the Schiris Rishus. So that was about 1997. I don't know if we've got a couple of years left to go on that, the Schiris Rishus. So I have to remind the people in the Heights, if there's two people living in the Heights in 15 years, we have to redo one of the Schiris Rishus. Right. But the one that I did was special because it included some going we weren't included in the original one. I'll explain to us when we get to it. It's a little complicated one. When we speak about doing the Schiris Rishus at an Erev Chatzeris, must it be done in that order? Do you have to do Schiris Rishus and then do Erev Chatzeris? Can you do it the opposite way? So the Mishnah Berurah has a long, long suffix about this. He's not sure whether the Seder HaDvarim has to be Dafka Schiris Rishus and then Erev Chatzeris. And at the end he says, well, it's hard to believe that it really has to be in that order, because what do you tell me? That's somehow an Erev Chatzeres that's done when they were still going there. It was Batel, it was meaningless. So it says Mishnah Berurah, even though it's not technically Chal, the Erev Chatzeres isn't really Chal until first you recite the Goyim, but he says, but it's no worse than if all the Jews own partnership and food together. We'll see this as we go on. If you have a situation where you have five people living in a Chatzer, and forget about doing an Erev Chatzeres, it happens to be that they're really eating together. The Mamash can eat their meals together. The Mamash own food together. That's sitting in somebody's house. And you don't really need an Erev Chatzeres. So Mishnah Berurah says that Erev Chatzeres is just a halachic way to get to the point that the people are really shutfim in food. But if Lamai said they're really shutfim in food, so you have an Erev Chatzeres. So says Mishnah Berurah, what do you mean that I made an Erev Chatzeres before I made this Chirus Hashur, so it's bottle. So it doesn't mean anything yet. So you're right, it's bottle. It doesn't accomplish anything yet. But so if we still all own the food. So if we all own the food, once we get this Chirus Hashur in 3 hours from now, it'll turn out a glory of Salim Afreya that we're shutfim in food. And you don't need an Erev Chatzeres. So Mishnah Berurah says the whole idea of insisting on doing the Chirus Hashur first is a little bit shaky. But otherwise, that's the Seder Advan. That's the Minhag Olam. That lechatchila we do the Schiras Hashus first, and after you do the Schiras Hashus, then you make the Erev Chatzeres. As we spoke about last week, there's always a problem in terms of the Erev Chatzeres when to make the bracha, because we want to make the bracha just atot as the Erev is about to be chal. So if you didn't do the Schiras Hashus yet, then you're not going to be able to make a bracha anyway, because you can make a bracha mitzvah Erev, but you're not allowed to carry anyway, because you didn't get rid of the goyim. So anyway, they say that dvarim has to be. You have to first make sure the walls are up, then you got to do the Schiras Hashus, and then at the end of the day, then you make the official Erev Chatzeres. So how do you go about doing it practically, Lamaisa, when you do a Schiras Rishos? So the Gemara says that it's not necessary to go to the actual Goy who lives in the apartment, the Goy who lives in the Bahayas, but you can go to one of his representatives as well. Again, the whole thing is all Midir Rabbanan, the whole thing. I mean, I'm not talking about any of this. The whole thing is Midir Rabbanan. So the Chacham instituted that as long as you go to one of his authorized representatives, that's okay. How authorized representative must he be? So the Gemara says, you can have what's called Schiro Lakita. What's a Schiro Lakita? Schiro means, yeah, it works for him. One of his employees, one of the people who's hanging out at his house, one of the people who has access to his house. Anyone who works for him has access to his house is good enough to serve as the representative of the Goy. So the Goy himself, he's nowhere near around. The Goy's out of town, whatever. But his Schiro Lakita is floating around, so you can do a Schiro Sashus with the Schiro Lakita as well. So that's what we do today, that when we do an Erev, we do a Schiras Rishos, so we don't go and knock on everybody's door to, you know, 1,000 goyim in town, we'll knock on everyone's door and offer them half a penny for their Rishos to the streets of Bergenfield. That's gonna take a long time, it's gonna be very inconvenient. So therefore, we follow this kula with Chazal instituted for us called Schiras Lakito. We go to his duly authorized representative. The question is, who is his duly authorized representative? So in the olden days, we know what the representative was. The worker, the Schir Lakito, the guy who works, who has access to come in and out, he's the Schir Lakito. So how does that play out in an apartment building setting? So we usually assume that means the super. If you have a super in the building, so it's his job. He's in charge of going into the apartments. Very often he has the keys to the apartment, or even if he doesn't have the keys, little to the apartments, he has access to the hallways, to the basements, to the lobbies, to the stairways. He cleans the floor. He fixes things that are broken. He's the Schir Lakito. So since he has pretty much free reign to the building, so he's considered to be the representative of the guy. And therefore, all you have to do is do the Schiras Hashus from the Schir Lakito himself. So that's what we do today. Let's say in a classic apartment building setup, you have five front families, 100 goy, knock on everybody's door. According to Rashi, if you start doing that every week, you don't have to worry about you moving out, they're going to throw you out. So the minig is that we do it one time, and we do it for a long period of time, so therefore we don't want to be bothered with this every week. That's what the minig is, that we do a Schiras Hashus from the Schir Lakito. So that was the source of the problem in Washington Heights, that we had, at the time we had 7 buildings, now there are many more buildings, but there were 7 buildings that were involved in the particular Erev Chatzeres. So all the buildings, the 4 buildings of 186, and there's the 187, the one in the corner, whatever it was. So we were getting ready to do the Erev, so we had a meeting set up. There were 7 supers. The famous meeting of the 7 supers. So we were supposed to meet with 7 supers on Friday morning to put the final touches on this Erev to do the Schiras Rishus. So go figure out luck, whatever time we called the meeting for. One of the supers got an emergency call somewhere else. He was a super in a building in the Bronx also. So there was a flood in this building in the Bronx. He couldn't come to the meeting. So we had 6 set of supers. That's a problem, because if we didn't have the 7 supers, then we would have to go knock at all the goyim in that building's doors, which we didn't really feel like doing. So we were trying very much to see what we could do, to how we could deal with this super. So maybe you can argue that well, maybe the super can appoint a shaliach. The super can appoint somebody to receive the money in his behalf. That touches on a sixth parasha, shlichus liakom. There's a rule of ain shlichus liakom that a goy can't appoint a shaliach. So the machlokes is the Magen Avraham, the Masas Ben Yamin. Can a goy appoint a shaliach if it's another goy? A goy can't appoint a Jew as a shaliach, and a Jew can't appoint a goy as a shaliach. So machlokes is can a goy appoint a goy as a shaliach? So maybe we could do is have the goy who's sitting in the Bronx fixing his mopping up the floors in the Bronx. He should call one of his friends in Washington Heights, and he should appoint him as a shaliach to be the recipient of the money on behalf of all the people in all the goyim in the buildings. It's like a shlichus of a schilakito or something. So that's a big question. Can you do that? So there were two problems. First of all, does that work up the halacha? And number two, there was a little bit of a communication problem that out of all the seven supers, only one of them spoke English. So he was supposed to be the representative of all of them to explain what's going on. The guy's on the phone. That didn't exactly work out so well. So then, I think it was a quarter of a shechta at the time, asked him what to do. So he said that, well, forget about the super. He said, what about the owner of the building himself? So if the super madlich has access to the building, the owner of the building for sure has access to the building. So who's the owner of the building? The good news was it was a Jewish guy. So we felt, he said, great. So call the Jewish fellow and explain to him that you're making Erev Chatzeres and you need him to in a sense be the schir lakito, and not the shaliach. He's the schir lakito of his goyish tenants. So that was the next suggestion. So we called him up, and we finally got him in his at work. So it was 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday, and the guy didn't know what was going on. He wasn't a firm fellow, and he's the one who said to us that he has to consult with his lawyer. He said, because I remember Rabbi Palmer at the time was doing the talking. So Rabbi Palmer explained to him, you know, we're doing a rental from all the. He's subletting. He was very confused as to what we're trying to do. We're trying to rent out all the common spaces, you know, on behalf of all the non-Jews in the building, and we need you just to represent them. So the guy, I guess, understandably so, said he has to speak to his lawyer. So we said, when can you facilitate that? He said, by Monday morning, I should be able to have an answer to the lawyer. So Monday morning, by Monday morning, we get to go. We'll find the guy in the Bronx. He'll finish cleaning up his building in the Bronx. So we nixed that idea. So we have one guy cleaning floors in the Bronx, another guy sitting in Manhattan negotiating with his lawyers, and we're sitting here like a bunch of golems, and we can't get the air put together for Pasha Zocha. That's what Kemaisa Shrekachoy. That's exactly what happened.
Was the hallway stolen by the non-Jewish owner? Not by the Jewish owner?
Not so Pasha, because even though he owns it, once he rents out the space to them, so then he's in effect giving them the access, right? That's going to build a problem.
It's so Pasha that the owner wasn't
He signed off on the building already. He already rented the building to all the goyim. He doesn't have. If the owner would decide that I want to kick you out of the hallways, he doesn't have a right to. He signed a lease with the goyim, with all the tenants already. So the tenants right now are the quote unquote owners. It's just that the owner still has the keys. He can still be the schil lakit. He can still clean up.
Don't most places go to the town or the police?
Oh, when we get to the town, we'll get the town set up. So again, so Topo, we're still talking about just the setting of an apartment building. Just a simple, supposedly simple, straightforward apartment building. The Post can point out that even in these types of circumstances, even when you're using the super as the representative, Bitara Schir Lakito, this may be a little bit of a problematic Schir Lakito, the Rivash already talks about. But if you have a situation where the Schir Lakito doesn't really have access to the house itself, he has access to the public areas, but he doesn't really have the keys to get into the house itself. So the Rivash says that, so then can the person represent the goy? He can represent him as far as he has koch to represent him. So you can have a strange situation. Now when you have a quote-unquote schir lakito that doesn't really have access to the house, but has access to the hallways, then the Erev is only valid, the schir shush is only valid vis-a-vis the hallways, not vis-a-vis the houses. So that's what the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Rivash. So we come out that, is a super really a schir lakito in the full sense of the word? Can a super mamish go into the apartments? Only to give him the keys. If you don't give him the key, I don't think he's legally allowed to, no, anyone will say it, you know. I don't think he's allowed to just barge into your apartment unless you, he is?
You have to give him
24 to 48
hours
notice,
but
he's allowed to come in for, you know. Really? He's allowed to come?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? I don't know. Okay. I don't know. So,
in Boca
or here? In Ramat Bet Shemesh?
In Boca.
So that's the rule?
Yeah.
That's in apartment buildings? So your mamash allowed to go, okay, so that's good. That would be, that's an important piece of information to know. So the poskim discussed that, is that maybe, again, I don't know if all the, it's the same everywhere, whatever it is. Anyway, so the poskim discussed, liyutsu, that the setup would be such a situation that the super has the rights to clean the floors of the hallways, right, to go into the elevator, right, to go into the hallway, to the lobby, but he doesn't have the right necessarily to go into your apartment. If that would be the case, so then this would be a funny kind of a schirus for sure. So it would only be a schirus for sure vis-a-vis the hallways, not vis-a-vis the apartments. If that would be so, so then, how would that play out, halacha? So what that means is you're allowed to carry in the hallways, but you're not allowed to carry in the goy's apartment, which usually we couldn't care less who's going to the goy's apartment the rest of the week. For sure, who's going to the goy's apartment on Shabbos. So that's what the poskim writes. If you have such a setup where the super can only go into the hallway, not to the apartment, so the schirus is just in the air of a mat in the hallway, then not mat to the apartment. So that was the background. We spoke about this story in the past. That was the background to our dilemma in Washington Heights. So when we set up the original schirus for sure, so we set it up in this manner. So in the back of my mind, I knew that you can't go into the goy's apartments on Shabbos. Big deal. Go into the goy's apartment on Shabbos. All of a sudden, the first Yom Noraim came around, and I realized, wait a second. I said, we use the goy should babysitter. Rabina, those are the famous babysitter in the Heights, Rabina. So we used her from Monday to Friday. We never used her on Shabbos, except for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So my wife wanted to be able to go daven. So we left the kids by the time it was Tov and Mary Yachov, so we left them at the babysitter. So the question is, when you go into the babysitter, first of all, you bring your kids in, you bring diapers in, you bring toys in, you bring food or whatever you bring in. So that's a potential problem. Rosh Hashanah, it's not a problem. On Rosh Hashanah, you're allowed to carry in Rosh Hashanah, so you're allowed to carry even in places where there's no Erev Chaseris. But in Yom Kippur, it's a problem. Because how can we bring stuff into the babysitter on Yom Kippur? I'm going into an area that's not covered by the Schir Sashur, so it's not included in the Erev Chaseris. So it should be also the Rabbanan to carry from the hallway into Rabina's apartment. So all of a sudden it dawned on me a couple of days before Rosh Hashanah that we're going to have this problem. So I decided I'll take the issue into my own hands. So what I'll do is I'll make a separate, distinct Schir Sashur with her. So forget about Schir Sashur, the whole building was already done 3-4 years, whatever it was. But now I'm going to make a separate Schir Sashur Davka with her. So that way at least her apartment will be mutter to carry into. So anyone wants to go their own Gersh babysitters, make their own Schir Sashur. So Kacha, so it was right before Rosh Hashanah. I didn't have to do it before Rosh Hashanah, but once I remembered, I did make sure to do it. So I said to her, I'm doing a Schir Sashur with you. I explained to her what I'm doing. So I told her it's for the next 25 years. I figured in about 25 years, she's probably not going to be watching. I figured to myself, hopefully I'll be out of the Heights by then, and even if more people will be in the Heights, she's probably not going to be watching kids for more than 25 years. 25 years will make a Schir Sashur. So again, that was exactly what year it was. It was the year that Yaakov was born, because I think before he was born, we used to go to Riverdale for Yontif. But that was when Yaakov was born in the summer, so it was too hot to go away for Yontif. So he was just from Tzolat Shek, he's going to be 14, so that was third. So that Schir Sashur is going to be about 13. This Rosh Hashanah will be the third. This Rosh Hashanah will be the bar mitzvah of that Schir Sashur. So it'll be 13. It'll be 14 years. I'm sorry. It's 14 years. We've got 11 years left ticking away. She's still watching babies. I still see her walking around, but I'm not sure she has the 11 years left in her career. But whatever it is. Anyway, so the bottom line is I made a Schir Sashur with her. So I took out a quarter out of my pocket. I don't even need a quarter. Could have used a penny. Even less than a pruta. But I had a quarter in my pocket. So I pulled the quarter out. And I said, I'm giving this to you. And I'm hereby renting out all the rights to come into your apartment whenever I want. And shine. So she looked at me like I was crazy. But it wasn't the first time that I did crazy things. So she knew me already. Good. Whatever the rabbi says, that's good. That's fine. So she said, no, I can't take money from you. She said, you might have to pay her very nicely at the end of Friday. She somehow no problem taking money. But she can't take money from me. I said, no, listen, it has to be. You got to take the money or else. She said, Michael, I said, do me a favor. Take the money. It's easier for me than to go through Chesh Mishpat right now. To take the money, keep the money, it's yours. So she felt guilty, like taking this extra money from me. So on Rosh Hashanah, she watched my kids. And when I went to pick them up, Rosh Hashanah in the afternoon, so she said that, she felt better. Why? Because she used to always take them to St. Nicholas, used to walk them 2 blocks over. Used to be these little horses, you know. You put the kid on for a quarter, the kid jumps around, the horse jumps around a little bit. So she used to do that with them during the week all the time. So she walked the kids over to St. Nicholas, and she needed a quarter, and she took them to her pocket. She realized she has the quarter that the rabbi gave her. That way she didn't feel so guilty keeping the quarter. She used the quarter to give my daughter a ride on the horsey. in Rosh Hashanah. So I said, that's a good tribute. It's a good thing on your shidduch resume. I said, you're the only person in history since the Tekonah Shlomo Melech who received a horse's ride with the hailing a quarter from Schiris Meshus from beforehand. So kacha, I didn't comment on her riding on a horse in Rosh Hashanah. I figured, no, it's a cut the Nechon Avel, it's amazing to my frisha. But anyway, so that was my daughter at the age of about two and a half, whatever it was. So riding on a horse in Rosh Hashanah. Anyway, so getting back to the story. So this Chirus Hashos that we do, when we do it just in terms of a building, is pretty straightforward. It means in theory you can go to the Goyim, but if you don't want to go to the Goyim, then you go to the Chirus Lakitas or Super, etc. What about if you have a bigger setup? What if you have like a whole community? So then you don't have Supers to go to. Who do you go to? Who is the Chirus Lakita available over here? So the Rishon already discussed, you go to the Sar Ha'ir. You go to the mayor, you go to the lord, you go to somebody, whoever's in charge of that area, so he has access to everybody's houses, so that's, or to the streets, whatever his access is. If he has access to the houses, then the Schirus just covers the houses. If he has access to the streets, so then at least it covers the streets, which is usually what we want to do anyway. So you go to the Sar Ha'ir in Shoy. So this was a big question. This was true, Kozman. There was a Sar Ha'ir. There was a guy who was in charge. He was really the lord. He was the baron. He was the whatever he was. He was the king, whatever he was. So he had real control. Problem is, now, Baruch Hashem, we don't live in feudalism anymore. So now the question is, how does that play out in terms of today? So they say over from the Sama Rebbe. The Sama Rebbe held that you can build an Erev in America. What's the problem? Build an Erev in Europe and build an Erev in America. He said, but the only problem is that he didn't know how to do a Schirus Hashus. Sama Rebbe said that how can you do a Schirus Hashus in a democracy? He said, there is no real Sad, there's no guy real power. We the people, the government, by the people, for the people, love the people. You got to go back to all the people again. He thought that model that the Rishonim developed in Europe of going to the boss. So he said that meant in the good old days when there was a real boss, there was a king. You broke into people's houses. Now everything you can't just march around town today. You got to be an elected official. So the Sami Rebbe wasn't so sure that the whole model of Schirus Hashus plays out this manazeh. But notwithstanding his concern, the Ma'aseh Minig is L'Halkah. We assume that there is a Schirus Hashus that can be done even with manazeh. And who do you go to? So you go to the same kinds of people, the Sar'irs, the Schir Lakitos, people who have pretty much access. So who are those people who have access? So you have a combination of different possible people who have access. So some of the people who may have access to get into people's houses are the chief of police. It means in theory he has to get a warrant, a bill of rights, a constitution, but push comes to shove, right? Even that you can tell me, okay, well, nice, if the police want to come to your house, if they get the right paperwork, they can do whatever they want, so they can come into your house. So some say you should go to the chief of police, you go to the mayor's in charge of the chief of police, you go to the councilman, you go to some elected official. So that's what the minig is in today's communities, that we go to some people in town, someone in the Teaneck town or something who has some real koch, some real power to a if you want to cover the houses themselves, then you got to go to someone who really has kach in the houses. If you just want to suffice yourself with the streets, so then you have, whoever is making decisions to when they're going to clean the streets. So somebody makes those decisions. Somebody decided one day they're going to close off Rector and they're going to pave the streets. Somebody decided they're going to poke a few holes in my in front of my house and let the water go in or out or whatever it's doing. So somebody has some shlit, some rishus to make those decisions. So whoever has rishus to make those decisions, so he's considered to be like the Schir Lakitas. That's what we usually do b'zman hazeh. The only thing is that only covers those places where the government officials actually have jurisdiction in. So there is an interesting shadow that was raised not that long ago about what if you have a fine? What if you have, you have an area in a particular city, but there are areas in that city that are legally not subject to the rules of that place. What do you mean? If you have embassies, consulates, things like that, so then based on international law, so those areas are their own jurisdiction. So if their areas are their own jurisdiction, so technically speaking, the chief of police doesn't have a rishus there. So then you have to go to, let's say you want to make an area in Yerushalayim, so you got to go to the Argentinian mission, you got to go to the Brazilian mission, you got to get every mission and get a separate Schirus Hashus, because you can't go to the chief of police, because the chief of police can't go in. You want to make an Erev in New York, so you got to go to all the 250 nations in the United Nations, get everybody's Rishus. You got to go to the Iranian government. You got everybody. You got to go to the Syrian government. Whoever's a member, whoever's got an embassy anywhere. So you got to go get their permission to do a schiras v'shus. So that's going to be quite a difficult feat to accomplish. So this shaila was, believe it or not, sent by, I don't know the background of this, Rabbi Noiv, the Baal Shemir Shabbos Kilchosa, sent the shaila to Rabbi Willig. So the two of them were correspondent over the years and friendly over the years. So the Shemir Shabbos asked Rabbi Willig to ask some of the mumchim in New York, ask some of the international lawyers about how to go about doing that. So from what I understand, the consensus of the lawyers was, any lawyers here? Any international lawyers? I can say whatever I want. Okay. So I think the consensus of the mumchim in New York was, is that the whole thing is a bubble mind. So that it's not true. That this idea that an embassy is international property, it's not really true legally. It's just a courtesy. That means that it's understood that we're not going to send our police troops barging into your embassy, because we don't want you to send your police troops barging into our embassy. So therefore, Isha Makom Yobu Shalom, we'll keep our laws in our embassy, you keep your laws in our embassy. But tachlis, bottom line, if the police really want to go into the embassy of Guatemala or something, so there's no international law that's stopping them. It's a courtesy, it's diplomacy, but in terms of legally, so no one can take them to The Hague and sue us for trespassing on their property, because it's not really true. It's not really their illegal property. So again, assuming that's true, so then that would be a little bit of a relief in terms of Mishiris Hashus. I think that's what the minig is. I think that people follow this suggestion that when we do Mishiris Hashus, even though maybe embassies or consulates in the area, we don't walk around collecting, giving quarters to every member of the UN. We just assume that the same chief of police or something is good enough to bother everybody. Interesting. Get back to the Washington Heights story. So in theory, we could have done it with the chief of police. We never bothered doing it with the town because it was easier to do it with the seven supers. So the seven supers had all the access to the houses and the chateras. So you don't really need it. It's just a very small area, so we don't really need to get the government involved. So in theory, we could have. At that point, we could have gone down to the 34th precinct and tried to deal with them, but it was already 5 o'clock on Friday, so we didn't think that was the best. We waited it out till after Shabbos.
So you go to each town?
He has to go to each town, I think so. Yeah, yes. As the area of here grows, now we have, how many towns? We have 4 towns in the area now. We have Teaneck, Bergenfield, New Milford, and we have Bogota. And believe it or not, it goes into Bogota. So it doesn't make it quite to the Bogota Golf Center, but it's getting there slowly, slowly. The Futsu Marasech Chutz, I think we have a couple, 2-3 blocks into Bogota, the area already exists. But anyway, right, we'll stop here.
And they went to the mayor?
We're in
Manhattan.
In Manhattan? I don't know who's in charge of the Manhattan mayor. The mayor, somebody, please. I think in Riverdale, if I'm not mistaken, I think they went to the...